They say opposites attract. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is the best bed for couples. You like a bed that feels firm, but they want soft? Sleep Number does that. You want to sleep cooler while they like to feel warm? Sleep Number does that too. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, during Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. See store for details.
Hello and welcome to The Midpoint. I'm in the studio today to catch up with comedian, actor and podcaster extraordinaire Ellis James. I say this because not only does he present multiple much-loved podcasts, but he's done so in two languages, English and Welsh. Not sure how many of my previous guests can boast that. But I don't think boasting is in his nature, because it's Ellis's relatability and down-to-earth chat on Five Live with his good pal and fellow comedian John Robbins that has not only won them awards, most recently Radio Moment of the Year at the Arias, but also a very loyal fan base. No subject is off the table, and they broadcast twice weekly now, as well as presenting How Do You Cope, a podcast which I've had the pleasure of being a guest on. When I met Ellis then, I knew I had to get him on The Midpoint. I'm keen to hear how midlife is shaping up for him, juggling broadcasting, tours, being funny in two languages, raising a young family, and following his beloved Swansea City. So here he is. Welcome to The Midpoint.
Hello.
It's good to have you here.
Absolutely gutted I'm eligible.
That was your response when I first asked.
So disappointed.
In fact, I think it was the reverse. You said to me once, I know what you're going to say. Come on The Midpoint, because you know how old I am.
But I'm too young and relevant.
And we'll get on to that, because being a comedian, it's interesting how you will grow with your fans and then you'll have the same problems as them and maybe the same issues and challenges, and that becomes relevant in the conversation you have with them. But equally, you still want to attract young fans, don't you?
Yeah. I was chatting about this with another comedian, and she was telling me, I'm just happy now that the people who are with me are going to be with me until I die or retire, because they're my age. So as long as there's enough of them, as long as we all make it, I'll be fine. And the interesting thing working with John, because we've been on the radio together for 10 years, when we first started, we were both in our early 30s and I didn't have children. And we both had completely different lives. And I am aware that people who've come to the Five Live show recently have gone back to the start and listened to the XFM ones and the
it's
Radio
It's almost
X
like
ones.
A narrative. It's a story that they're trying to
tell.
Well,
it's there's an awful lot of life in those podcasts.
Yeah.
And I don't feel any different, but obviously I am different.
You're a bit like the Marvel films. You've got to go back to the early characters.
Or Dennis the Menace, yeah.
So are they going back because they want to hear what you were like without kids? What the
I
energy
think we
was
were
like?
More fun, yeah. So many of those shows were hungover, which I would never do now.
Obviously, because you're so professional.
Yeah, and John has stopped drinking. And
yeah.
So it is interesting. It's an interesting document. And I'm sure that if I went back and listened, there would be opinions I held then that I don't hold now.
That's interesting.
So I tell you what, another embarrassing look in the mirror is when I moved house, I found a load of my old notebooks from when I started out doing stand-ups. That was in 2005, so I was 24. And when I'm struggling to write something, because I'm writing a new show at the moment, actually, when I'm struggling to write something, I think, God, I was so prolific then. God, I was so bloody funny then and prolific. And I found the old notebooks and I was prolific. It was all absolute doggerel. The difference was I just wrote it all down. Whereas now I think, before I get the pen, I think, that's just rubbish, isn't it? That is just a
You've
bad
idea. You've
actually
got a better internal filter now.
Exactly, yeah.
You just spewed it all out.
Yeah. And I think to myself, God, I had so many ideas then. Yeah, they were all bad. So it's just,
or are you more discerning now and you look back and go, well, you know, actually at the time, maybe they were decent ideas and now you're so much better at what you do. By definition, the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours, however you want to judge it, you are going to be better at what you do now.
Yeah, I wrote four stand-up shows in English, which I did at the Edinburgh Festival, and then I toured them. And then I wrote three in Welsh and I'm writing the fourth. But I did a charity gig in Welsh last year and I haven't done stand-up since before the pandemic. So I did a couple of warm-ups because it was quite a big theatre, so I didn't want to mess up in front of lots of people. So I did small warm-ups. And I had to go back and relearn a lot of stuff because I didn't have time to write anything new. So I watched the three shows, 2015, 2017 and 2019. And 2019 was the only one I really liked.
Really?
And the 2015 one, I thought, well, I wouldn't say that now. And I certainly wouldn't. If I did, I wouldn't say it like that. And it's quite an odd feeling, actually, having a document of how you thought.
Mm.
And I'd done previews and work in progress shows and stuff. So it's effectively a diary that you've had 20 goes at.
What would you say are the most fundamental things that have changed in terms of your opinions?
I used to drink more. I barely drink now.
Is that for health reasons or because you can't get up in the middle of the night with kids?
It is a combination of both. Like a hangover is no fun with children.
No.
Because they don't care. And they don't cut you any slack.
They don't expect late nights.
And I've got too much on. And partly health, and it just...
Has John influenced that?
No, not really. I was that way anyway, I think. And I just get less opportunity to do that stuff. So, for instance, I'll go and watch Wales play Montenegro in September. And I'll have a drink then.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like a binge drinking session.
So when you say drinking, the odd glass of wine or champagne?
Oh, yeah, I'll do that. But I don't...
I
don't have sessions anymore. So I went on my 40th birthday. Swansea City were playing Bournemouth on my 41st birthday. So I thought, I'll just go and watch the football with a load of mates. And they all knew it was my birthday. And... Someone opened a can of lager like half past 10 or something. I thought, this is horrible. I was eating porridge an hour ago.
Did you partake?
And I did. And I had the first couple. I thought, this is actually really unpleasant. And I used to love that. But that was just a very Welsh or British attitude to... I read somewhere that the sort of high point for British drinking... was 2004 when I was 23, 24 years of age. I was like, yeah.
The high point, can we do
that? In terms of like units per person per annum or something. And it was something daft, like something really ridiculous.
And you were absolutely in your prime.
I was 23, 24. I just graduated. So yeah, I was doing
so
my
culturally,
bit.
So culturally, actually, if you were that person now in 2024, the 23, and you'd probably be drinking a lot less because it feels to me like that,
yes,
that culture is definitely something that's on the wane.
I feel sorry for young people because also if you make mistakes, there's a digital footprint.
Mm, mm.
So when I made a mistake in 2004, it was pre-camera phone.
Mm.
So, you know, your friends might have seen it, but that was it then, and then it was gone.
Yeah.
But now this stuff lasts forever, seemingly.
Yeah.
And you've got no control over it as well, because if someone else has taken the photo and put it on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, then you can plead with them and say, please take it down, right? Or if they don't, then it's... And employers look at this stuff and all that kind of thing. So I'm quite glad. God, yeah. That's such a man in his 40s thing to say. But yeah,
It is, but it's so true. And I look at how young people's behaviour changes because of that as well. It's not just having that digital footprint, is it? It's that being aware of every single microscopic move they make in social environments and, you know, and checking photos before they've even lived that moment.
And I was talking to... I was talking to someone who does a lot of youth theatre and drama groups with young people. And I said, so what are they like? Because my kids are too young.
Mm.
And she said, they're really worried about the economy and they're really worried about the climate. So the ones I talk to, and, you know, these are the kids who are doing drama.
Mm.
So
they have interests outside.
In my experience, the drama kids were often the creative misfits and often the more thoughtful ones. So maybe it's different. I don't know. This is a broad generalisation. But she said, so they're often very anxious. I, of course there were anxious people when I was younger, but I wasn't anxious. I wasn't really worried about that stuff.
Mm.
And I feel, you know, I think it's very sad that a generation are worried.
Well, there's clearly a rise in anxiety across society, but young people are told all the time, aren't we, just cannot get the help they need. And you wonder why there are so many more anxious kids. Because, you know, you keep hearing it's COVID and what happened to kids in COVID, but it can't just be that.
No, and there's a book called The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. I don't know if you've heard of him. I actually saw him live last week. Because he's
a stand-up psychologist.
So he was actually very funny, at the Union Chapel where I've done stand-up. But he thinks or he put a lot of the blame on the smartphone, because these things started to, you know, anxiety and depression started to go up in around 2010, 2011, when kids started having smartphones. Because the problem with the internet is that it's a thing that's designed for adults that a generation of children were given access to.
And they've designed it effectively.
Yeah.
How we and my, have taken it.
My parents, my mother especially, was really hot and strict on me not watching films before I was, you know, before I was, before they were suitable.
Before the age
all that
was
kind
suitable,
of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I understand that you
Which
don't watch.
Which sounds so innocent now, doesn't it?
It does.
The idea that you couldn't see a 15 before you
Mad.
Were 15.
And I understand that. I mean, I wasn't allowed to watch EastEnders until for a bizarrely long time.
I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
What the hell? My mum the other day, I said, "Mum, EastEnders, it was a prime time 7 p.m. BBC One." She was like, "Yeah, I got that one wrong. That was too late." But it's difficult to manage.
Mm.
And also, certainly watching my 9-year-old daughter on a computer or whatever, they're better than we are.
Mm.
So they just find workarounds. And so I read something the other day. God, I sound like an old man shouting at a cloud. But, you know, they might use Google Docs rather than, say, WhatsApp, because it's just easier to delete.
Right.
And, you know, you can get rid of it more quickly. And
have you been educated on this with kind of people who come to you at school and things and tell you this stuff? Or have you just found this stuff?
No, I found this stuff. Izzy read this book, The Anxious Generation. Right. It was, had a really profound effect on her.
Hmm. And are you putting things in place now for your kids?
Yeah, and it's hard, though, because you've basically got to do it with other parents.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because if they're the odd one out,
well,
it's
a
nightmare.
My kids were 13 when they got their phones, and they were the last people.
Were they smartphones?
They're only 18, so everybody's
got yes,
smartphones.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yeah. I know I look older than them, but I haven't got 48-year-old
no,
kids.
No, but I've seen your...
Oh, he's just big. He's
yeah,
just
yeah,
big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a big guy.
He's 6'6" and 120 kilos. So,
wow, right.
Yeah, and he's been like that for years.
Yeah, so I couldn't work out his age.
Has this guy got a mortgage?
Crikey.
So they were both just before their 13th birthday, because their birthday's end of July.
He's not old, he's just big.
And they wanted to have their phones before, I said they could have them on their 13th birthday, and they said, "Can we get them before the end of term so we can hand them in the morning, because I've never handed a phone in the morning." So
God.
I let them have phones just before, and I was obviously similar to Izzy. I was really worried about, I've always worried about kids and phones before it became kind of much more a mainstream conversation, because I just couldn't believe we were letting people access, young people access so much information that was way beyond what their, you know, their understanding. And my son, the big one, who's
who could be 50,
who's either 19 or 38, it didn't make any difference. He still became the kid that I didn't want to kind of see scrolling on his phone all the time.
You know?
So he does a lot of sport, and he's outside, and he plays professional rugby.
Sport is the key.
Yeah, and that bit has been the saving grace. But it's still such an important part of his life, more so than his sister, I would say, who's outside a lot more as well. And that part really worries me, because I think, what more could I have done? Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? I didn't. I was really militant about it, about not having it until that age. And still,
so that's 5 years ago.
Yeah. And still it's become, he, ironically, having protested and protested and protested and said, all our friends have got them, we want them. And still he says to me now, "Oh, I wouldn't let my kids have phones till they're 15.
Oh, so, my God.
And he says, "And I certainly wouldn't let them go on TikTok." And I said, "I didn't let you go on TikTok. You were doing that illegally." But that's interesting. He's nearly 19. But coming out of his mouth now, to already have that realisation that it's not good for you. And, you know.
Yeah, because sport is the thing that I cling to, because this Jonathan Haidt, at the event, because I've only just started reading the book, so I'm not an expert, but he was pointing out that kids will be able to, you know, talk to their friends, or even if they're on a Switch, they might be able to, you know, talk as they're gaming, or they might be WhatsApping their friends. When I was a teenager in the 1990s, I used to come home from school and ring the people I'd been sitting next to in school and talk to them more. And my dad used to say, you've been sitting next to them since 9 a.m. How is this happening? And so you sort of think, well, it's just...
just an extension of that.
It's just an extension of that. It's just a slightly different version of that. But actually, it isn't. And they become... they often, even though they're talking to their mates, they often feel lonely. And I see kids, you know, kids from friends of mine who are teenagers, a bit older than my children, who are 9 and 5. One friend in particular, his son is obsessed with rugby, really good player, and he's 14. So he's training all the time and, you know, he's playing at the weekend and this kind of stuff. He's going in early and he's training with his mates. So I look at him and I think, well, that's a proper social life that I would recommend, that 14-year-old me would recognise.
Yeah, and I would say that as well with Ruben. He is brilliant socially because he's, you know, he trains with people all the time. You know, he's always...
And with people who are older than him as well.
Yeah, people older, understanding to speak across the age. And so it definitely hasn't, having a phone has not, at 13, has not impacted his social skills. He much prefers hanging out real life with people.
See, that's good.
Doesn't want to sit in his room and speak to friends, wants to go and actually be with friends. And I think that's where sport is not only healthy from the point of view of your body and your mind in terms of a release and endorphins, but actually the social skills that kids
get
that. And let alone learning to win and lose and, you know, getting a little bit of kind of...
And losing rhythm in a way that's safe.
Yeah.
Because if you play sport, you could win or lose hundreds, if not thousands of times in your teen years, which is actually a very important life lesson.
Yeah.
And I played football. I still play a lot of football. But I had probably a 5 or 6 year gap in my late teens and early 20s where I was just doing other things. I really regret that now. I wish I'd stuck at it, actually. They feel like lost years.
What were you doing?
I was in a band and I was reading a lot about football. and I was learning to play instruments and stuff.
They weren't really wasted then, were they?
No, but I think I...
If you said I was lying down looking at the clouds.
Yeah.
I mean, you were being a very creative person.
But I oddly think that I thought there was one or the other and you couldn't do both. And that's a nonsensical position. But yeah, I played under 12s, under 14s, and then under 16s. It all got a bit serious.
But I think also what you've hit on there is being well-rounded, you know, and kind of doing a lot.
And bored.
Being bored.
Kids aren't bored anymore.
Yeah.
I was bored all the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much written about this, isn't there, about both our climate and how that has created so many artists because people spend so much time in the winter. And also the fact that if you're bored, you have to create something. We had a shed in the garden and we had an old TV that had been put in there. It didn't work. But we used to pretend we had a TV station because we had an old TV. I mean, that's when I think about it, that's totally nonsensical.
But I totally understand that. I completely relate to that. But if you told a 15-year-old that now, they would think you were mad. They would think, just turn the telly on, put iPod on or something.
We used to write scripts and we used to pretend we were, you know, why? Do you remember Why Don't You?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's where Ant and Dec got their big break.
We pretended we were the Why Don't You gang in our shed.
Yeah.
And that was my first telly job.
I can completely relate to that. But that's very important, I think.
Yeah. And using, we'd been there for hours and hours and using whatever props were around you.
Oh, that's lovely, though.
Yeah. And so I guess those bored moments. And also, do you think my mum and dad knew where we were? Hadn't got a clue.
Yeah. What are you doing?
We were vaguely
around.
They're
in the studio.
Yeah. They thought we were in the garden, but nobody bothered to come and check.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I don't know whether you two as parents are quite helicoptery, whether you let your kids kind of, you know, have a bit of...
That's the thing he was talking about, because children, it happened a little bit later in the UK than what it did in the US, but children have got way less freedom now than they used to. So a lot of my, you know, certainly my parents' generation, when I talk to them about walking to school on their own from a really young age, I mean, with other kids, but no adults is the crucial thing. And problem is, childhood... Children do an interesting thing where they will do something and then once they can do it, they will try and make it a bit dangerous because you learn by taking risks. So, for instance, you know, from my own point of view, I used to cycle down. We used to live on a hill, so I used to cycle down the hill. And then once I was confident doing that, we made ramps and then inevitably that went wrong.
And after the first A&E visit.
Yeah. But that's quite important. And if I saw my kids at that age going down a hill on a ramp and going over a ramp, I'd be like, what the hell are you doing? So you have to talk yourself out to that, I think.
And why do you think it is, though, that we are now so much more, and I'm generalistically kind of through, so much more risk averse?
Yeah. You know, it was a great upbringing because it was a sort of street of starter homes. So there were lots of kids my age, probably 10 or 12 children my age, my sister's age. So we were all out together. There was often about 15 of us. Mm. That was brilliant. Mm. It was like a sort of American film. So making the ramps, no parent thought that was irresponsible. It wasn't. It's just perfectly normal. But I think nowadays, you'd get a text message saying, you haven't, have you noticed?
Yeah.
Your son's made a ramp. Is he, going to do anything about it?
Have you noticed?
Yeah, I don't know.
Have you noticed your son's climbed up the side of the building to play football? And Or he's gone. I mean, it's worrying to an extent, isn't it? Because I think freedom is important because that's where you express yourself, you try things, you get things wrong. And as a parent, it's your right then to be cross later on with the child. But at the same time, you do want them to. In fact, a friend said a really good thing to me the other day about her daughter. It was about having the dog upstairs. And she said, I don't mind her taking the dog upstairs as long as she doesn't know I know the dog's upstairs. And that's the thing about being, as long as the child doesn't know that you know that they've done that thing, because the minute you do acknowledge that they've done it, then you've got to kind of tell them off or tell them that there are dangers involved. I'm not talking about the dog being upstairs, by the way. No, that's fairly safe. But, you know, I think it's that thing of kind of knowing that they're doing it, but at the same time, not letting them know. And therefore, you're facilitating the danger a little bit.
Also, you are parenting on the hoof.
Yeah, in spite of the fact that you mentioned a few manuals already. Yeah.
but it's you're improvising, really. Mm. So I often...
Because society's evolving all the
time.
And
I often find, and the problems change as they get older, and I often find that I have been inconsistent. And
that's
my
perfectly fine.
Daughter in particular will say, well, you said this a month ago, so what's changed? And I'm like, yeah, well, I was less tired then.
But when they ask for an explanation of why, so my son used to say, but okay, that's fine, but just tell me why.
Yeah,
I'll
tell you why.
What's the reason?
I was tired then. And I was late, so I was riffing, and now I'm not late, so I've got slightly more time to think about it. So yeah, there's gonna be inconsistencies.
When they notice the inconsistencies, I think you're done.
Oh yeah, my God, I haven't won an argument for about 7 years. It's crazy.
Are you both on the same page generally?
Yes, thank God.
Yeah,
that must be a nightmare.
Mm. And you. Do you promise to each other to kind of not have that disagreement if there ever is one in front of you?
Yes, that's...
Inconsistency in parenting has to be done away.
and you kind of want to pause in a united front, really. Mm. Otherwise, that must be... Which is why, I suppose, if you parents who've separated, it must be really difficult.
Yeah.
Because also you want to treat them. And use the smartphones as an example. If parent A said, well, no, you live with me and you can't have a smartphone. And then parent B says, you can have a smartphone in my house. Mm. Kids are going
to
be like,
I
love parent B. Yeah. Parent B's great, actually. I think parent B has my best interests at heart.
The best part about giving our kids smartphones at 13, it was a good thing to take away. Because there's so little that you can actually really discipline kids with.
Yes. So, having seen a picture of your son... Can I have your phone, please? No. Oh, good. And that's what I think. And I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
And I do understand it's important to not sound like a Luddite, right? And not.
That's a big issue, I think, with campaigning to change our relationship with smartphones. You can't get rid of them.
Mm.
And they're very useful. For instance, I'd never been here before. I cycled here. I used Google Maps. Mm. It was incredibly useful. But the French are doing it and the Americans are doing it. You're looking at how to manage childhood and smartphones and social media in particular. I mean, social media... I keep banging on about Jonathan Haidt, but he...
I feel like he's here.
He had quite an interesting thing where he said, right, let's go back to 1990. And if I told you that you could have your map and all the music you like and all this different stuff and a torch and a camera all in one thing in your pocket, would you want it? And everyone... apart from a couple of real, genuine Luddites, said, yes, please.
Mm.
And then he explained social media and he said, but now would you want that in your pocket? And very, very few people put their hands up.
Mm.
And social media is the one, like my phone broke about 6 months ago. And what a lovely day that was. I thought, God, this is mad, isn't it?
Mm. Hi, Gabby here. I'm just popping on to tell you about the Midpoint Plan book. I'm so delighted. It is out now, available in all the usual retailers and hopefully a few unusual retailers too. It's packed with advice from the brilliant experts we've had on the podcast and stories as well from the well-known guests who've graced us with their presence for the last 4 years or so. Across a range of topics, from relationships to mental health, sleep to nutrition, you know the score. We cover everything and how it affects us in midlife. And I've also woven my experiences and learnings through the book too. I really hope you love it.
It can be hard balancing taking care of kids, senior loved ones, and yourself. Remember, it's okay to ask for help. There's a reason 29 million families have turned to Care.com. Find background-checked sitters, nannies, and senior caregivers who can help with everything from watching kids after school to senior meal prep. Whether you need full-time, part-time, or even occasional help, you can view rates and book highly rated caregivers that fit your budget and schedule. Get the help you need with Care.com.
You mentioned your cycle, so changing tack slightly as you've brought your bike up already and your helmet, your red helmet, sitting next to me.
I gave you a very sweaty hug, which I feel awful about 20 minutes ago.
And you said, I love it when you came. You said, I love cycling. Is this a midlife thing? You didn't mention cycling with all the other things you were doing as a
kid. If you want to look at what I like, I am 43. I like cycling. Speciality coffee and six music. Yeah, I'm a bit of a cliche, actually. No, I loved it as a kid and as a teenager, but in that way that kids ride on their bikes, it's just a way of getting around with their friends. And then I didn't for a long time. And then I moved to a part of London that's not on the tube. And I kept being let down by public transport to the extent that I thought that's something, I have to do something. So I started cycling to the nearest
tube
station.
And it wasn't going to be Mayor of London, so the next thing.
I either stand. So I started cycling to the nearest tube station, which is like 4 miles away, which you can do really quickly. And then I thought, oh, I really enjoy this, actually. So I started cycling to the destination. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the BBC from my house is 8 miles away or something.
In all weathers.
Pretty much, not as much now. Do you know why? Because frustratingly about audio, we're not, everything's filmed for social media.
Yeah.
So when it wasn't ending up on Twitter, yes, and I looked an absolute mess in that studio and I didn't care. But now, if it's hammering down, I wouldn't. But then you start just doing longer distances. And it was around the time I had kids. And so I used to really enjoy running and playing five-a-side, but that I just couldn't find the time for it. But it's effectively incidental exercise. I've got to get to these places anyway. So I thought, I'll just do it on the bike because it's in a more efficient way of doing it than.
And have you gone kind of crazy with the bike? And as you've become more successful, has your bike gone up and up in value?
No, that's on the horizon. It's weird because what it does for my mood is so fantastic. And I don't mean fantastic in great, like fantastical in sort of almost far-fetched. Like it's difficult to believe and people think I'm lying, but it puts me in such a good mood. So when we were doing Fantasy Football League, that was 12 miles from my house. And I know I was annoying in the first half an hour of that writing meeting because I was in such a good mood. I'm too bouncy.
Tigger's here.
And I know it was getting on people's nerves. And that is, after 20 minutes, the last 20 minutes of the journey, me telling myself that I needed to chill out. Come on, you need to calm down now. No one wants this. It's January. Calm down. No one needs this.
This can't have just been the physical endorphins that happen through exercise. This must have been that mentally, what was it? Was it taking in the sights and sounds or feeling that you were empowered because you were overtaking buses and cars?
I think I'm very lucky. I get a lot of endorphins from exercise very quickly. I don't have to run very far to feel great, which is just, and that sounds immensely smug, so I apologise to your listeners.
You know what? I think of all the boasts, I have to say that's the most humble
boast. Yeah.
I don't have to do much exercise to feel great. It's not a bad thing to say.
So, like, I've got friends of mine who never get endorphins at all or don't seem to, and it's just a chore.
Mm.
Whereas I really maybe 2K.
And I'm enough.
Like, yeah. And cycling, because I had terrible bikes because I was scared they were going to get nicked.
Mm.
And then I bought a much nicer bike, because our new office, it's got a sort of a special place with a fob and all that kind
of thing. You did ask a lot about what the bike security was like.
I know. Yeah. God, that's so embarrassing. Anyway, so it's the equivalent of someone who's always driven bangers driving a much nicer car. Right. So that's good. And you get in places quickly, and it's the endorphins. So, yeah.
Have you got a car?
I do have a car. I just don't care about cars. I've been driving for 25 years. I've got so little interest in cars. Izzy scraped it the other day. Someone drove into it in a car park. I haven't done anything about it.
You're very French.
Yeah.
Because this is the French don't care about cars, do they? When you're in London in August and it's filled with those quite garish supercars that are kind of like they race around like metallic kind of Ferraris and stuff like that. You don't get that in Paris.
No.
And I was trying to explain to my kids, we were in Paris last summer for their birthday. We're trying to explain that a Frenchman would rather have, you know, his apartment on the Champs-Élysées, his villa in the South France, and he'd still be driving a battered old Citroën C5.
Yeah.
They just don't care. And they love cycling.
So yeah.
You're kind of like Welsh, but twinned with France.
Merci. So, yeah. I'm very lucky, really, in that it doesn't take very much for me to feel.
So fitness-wise, I think approaching, you know, you're kind of heading through your 40s now at a rate and you're very fit and you don't have that kind of, and it appears to me that you're not worrying too much about that part of your life. You don't seem to be kind of changing shape or worrying about fitness. That's taken care of because of you've found a way to both be practical and keep fit.
It's exactly that.
Yeah.
I do go to the gym. So I didn't play football for a year or so because my son was a very bad sleeper. And I played in the last, I'm booked up to like 5 or 6 different games. My favourite one, I played the last one before lockdown. And I thought, you idiot, you should have made the time. So then in lockdown, I said to myself, I'm going to play as much as I can. So that's mainly to see people because I work a lot from home now. So
it's a good way of getting that social interaction.
And then the cycling, because I just need to get around. And then the gym, because I only, you know, I'm not mad at the gym. I don't spend hours there. But I do go because for a variety of different family members, I spend quite a lot of time in care homes. Like my dad's in a home because he's unwell. And I see a lot of people who were very fit now being very frail.
Mm.
And so if I'm 43. And what's weird is, even though I'm very lucky and I like a lot of people my age, especially if they play contact sports or combat sports, by now I've got bad knees or bad hips or whatever, and I haven't got any of that. Mm. So I'm very lucky in that sense. But I don't feel invincible at all. And I find that quite motivating because I've seen some people age amazingly and I've seen some people be very unlucky in their old age. And obviously, you know, stuff happens that you can't plan for. Of course it does.
But if you can prevent
it. I try and do that.
You mentioned the care home and your dad.
Yeah.
And we were due to meet about 6 or 7 weeks ago.
Yes.
And he's got Parkinson's.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd had a bit of a...
Yeah, he was unwell. He was really unwell. It's interesting with dad because I remember him as a really fit bloke. Like, I remember going to watch him run a half marathon. I remember going to watch... He used to play squash with his mates and badminton as well. So he would take me and I would watch, but we would play together before they turned up. So he was always a really active person in his 20s, certainly in his 20s and 30s. Because of where he grew up, he went to a really amazing rugby school. So he played quite a decent standard. But I think... We moved house, and so he was unable to walk to work like he had done. And then he slipped a disc playing, you know, he hurt his back playing squash, I think. And so I think that frightened him a little bit. And then his friends all had bad knees and elbows, and they stopped playing. So I remember when I was sort of...
And what age would he have been when he stopped?
Younger than I am, certainly in his 30s.
Really?
Yeah, and so it's one of those things I always said to myself that if I could still be active, I would be active.
Mm.
Like, there's a guy at my gym... He's 75.
Wow.
He's there every day. And he used to run marathons in the 70s and he's still running. Like, he's been running marathons for half a century.
That's incredible.
And I was talking to him about this the other day and I said, you know...
We have his number.
Yeah. But he said, I don't think it's exceptional because I've always done it.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the comedian's game, there's a comedian I play with and he's 73. And he was obviously, I've been playing them for years, he was obviously really good when he was
younger. This is at football.
I just think, wow, if you can still do that when you're that age, that's unreal.
And if you don't stop, there's no real reason why you can't keep going. That's what all the fitness experts we ever have on the podcast tell
us.
And you have to do a bit more probably, actually.
And it's really, God, it makes me sound so old, but I'm really interested in health span rather than lifespan. Because you want to be active and fit and have a good quality of life for as long as possible.
Well, you know, I've just, in the beginning of July, the Midpoint book comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things I say in the introduction is there's no point in aging apart from the fact that you stay alive. There's no point in aging badly in the sense of, as in, of course, you want people to stay alive even if they have certain problems. But personally, I want to age as well as I can, right?
Yes.
That's my aim, is to age as well, because it's not about what you look like or what, you know, kind of whether how many wrinkles you've got on your face, but you want to be able to do stuff. You know, if I have the possibility to move, I want to try and move. So that's the kind of motivator.
Yeah, like my mother goes to Zumba and she goes to a variety of different fitness classes. And she didn't at all when I'm one of three. When we were kids, because she was so busy, she was working
at the bottom of the hill catching you as you came down the skateboard.
But she was a working mother of three. So obviously, you know, never went to aerobics or any of that kind of stuff. But she does loads of it now, loves it. And it's quite inspiring, actually, because it's a part of her. And in lockdown, she was going for long walks and this kind of stuff. And it's something that's very much built into her day. So you see it.
And if she's also doing a lot with your dad's care and she's spending time with him, I think it's really important mentally.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely agree with that. And that thing with ageing, obviously, you know, you never know what's around the corner and it might be out of your hands.
Completely, yeah.
But there are certain things that you can do to try and prevent various things. So I'm quite...
You're quite mindful about that, considering...
I think about it all the time.
Mm. Considering you're still quite young.
Thank you. Finally.
You're at the younger end of midlife.
Yes, I'm just creeping in.
And is he on the same page with you on that as well?
Yeah. So she went to Pilates this morning and she's just taken up running. And I love watching her run.
What a pervert.
No, but she was one of those people. And she used to say, oh, I can't run on concrete. It just doesn't feel right. This sounds like a criticism, but especially the women I know who are in their 30s and 40s, the majority of them tend to do something, whether it's a spin class or whatever. The vast majority of them, unless they were very sporty at school, at PE, were trying to get out of it with a note. So I think there's something going wrong somewhere with especially teenage girls.
Oh, yeah. And the dropout rate is still worryingly high.
Yeah. And you think... A lot of women come to it much later, and that's brilliant, and I'm glad. But there's like a lost decade for a variety of different reasons. And obviously it's hard because, you know, unless you're at some special sport academy, you're working with a wide range of abilities and all sorts of things, and you've got limited time and limited time a week as well. So, but it makes me very happy when someone who's been trying to get out of PE since they were 11.
And that was Izzy, was it?
She said, oh, yeah. I mean,
she wasn't.
No, she was the drama kid.
Is she getting the same endorphins and the same boost from running that you get?
Yes. And I don't think she can, even though she's been doing it for a while now, I think she still remembers it wasn't an excuse, but she was like, oh, no, I could never do that. And she went to, you know, she studied drama in college. And I used to really take the piss out of the drama students. It's only now with Izzy you realise how hard they're working. So they all, well, if you go to, you know, RADA or Central or East 50 or whatever, they all do like an hour of intense cardio at about 8 in the morning and you can't get out of it. So they all, when they graduate, actors are super fit.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing a couple of plays a term, so they're always rehearsing.
Yeah. I went to see Dorian Gray last week with Sarah Snook. In terms of physicality and how hard a show is, I came away from that not just appreciating her talents as an actress, but to be on stage on your own, 90 minutes.
It's hard craft.
Yeah. Moving around mentally and physically, knowing where you've got to be, and you know, that's a very complex technical show.
I did history. I really did take my foot off the gas.
Didn't meet Izzy at uni?
No, on the stand-up circuit. I went to doing a gig in Devon. But
And were you resisting falling in love with a comedian? Did you think that might be a bad idea?
No,
you were desperate
all.
For a comedian.
No, I hadn't given it that much thought, I don't think. But it was great. It was great straight away. It's just, it's really nice watching her now because our daughter's quite sporty. Mm. Like, she loves gymnastics and climbing and various other things. And so I just want to maintain that for as long as possible.
And also, she sees her mum doing stuff. I think that's,
yeah.
And dad. That's, I think that for kids to see their parents doing activity and sport is really important because they,
yeah,
it becomes very normal to them then. And you kind of know this is forever now, right? You know, with exercise and movement. You
yeah.
Know, it's not going to be, you're not going to suddenly get to 50 and go, well, that's enough. I'll stop
yeah.
now.
And I but think people it, did, you see. That's they, the
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, and all the evidence points to, you know, for most of the big diseases that eventually take people, the longer you can keep moving and doing things, it's the best thing you can do, as well as obviously eating a really good diet, healthy
yeah.
diet, if you can, with as little processed food as you can. And, you know, so things, I think those all those markers are really good, aren't they?
Yeah, fingers crossed. I used to work with, I spent a lot of time with an American comedian in my late 20s. And I suspect that he was in his mid to late 40s and he used to lie about his age. And I was doing a tour of
Australia. He told you he was mid-20s?
No, but I was doing a tour of Australia and it was no one knew how old he was.
Right.
And I knew his agent, I knew his producer, and they wouldn't tell me. And they had this look on their eye, in their eye, that they were desperate to say, but they knew that they'd get told off. And he was obsessed with, he was a bit like an early version. You know that Brian Johnson guy, that billionaire who's trying to live forever? He looks so weird. And he tried injecting himself with the plasma, blood plasma from his 18-year-old son to see if he could.
This is Brian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was thinking, your friend did that as
no,
well.
No, no, no.
Because Brian Johnson.
But he didn't have a kid, just some random 18-year-old boy. So this Brian Johnson guy, it's interesting and laughable at the same time. So this bloke, he was very dishonest about his age. And I think partly because he thought that the industry would lose interest in him if they thought he was old. And I can understand that. I think especially if you're a woman, it is a different ballgame if you're a woman, and it's incredibly unfair. But I don't think that it was affecting male stand-ups in the same way. It was entirely from vanity. So he was always in the gym, like all the time. And it meant that he had a lot of material about the gym, which was very dull. And he was doing stuff like the paleo diet. So he was trying to eat like a caveman. I'd be backstage at him just thinking, I was like 29 or something, just thinking, come on, mate, chill out. But now I'm near the age he was then.
So you do know he was in his 40s then?
I'm convinced. Yeah. I'm 99% convinced he was in his mid-40s, right? And he looked great for his age. That's the thing, because he was always exercising. Mm. But now I'm sort of his age. I'm less bothered about
industry
stuff,
age and stuff,
because
yeah.
audio is slightly different to, you know, telly anyway, and I'm a man or woman, so obviously that's helpful. But the kind of trying to look after yourself because you're scared of something, I now understand that. I can relate to that a bit. I don't know what his story was. I didn't know him very well.
Do we know
well.
If he's still around?
Do you know what? I might Google him, actually. He'd be, what year was that, 2010?
So he'd be getting on towards his 60s.
On towards 60 now.
Yeah. We don't know if he's still a comedian, let alone alive.
I bet you I'll Google him now and he'll look about 15. And I'll think he got it right and I was an idiot.
And how much of that has come into sharper focus since your dad's illness?
A lot, because I know lots of people with Parkinson's and lots of people's parents. So it is something that I've been, and my grandfather as well, so it's something I've been exposed to since I was about 10 or something.
Mm.
And because I remember my old man being very fit, you realise how fragile the human condition can be. So like I had a chest infection about 7 or 8 years ago. Because I remember it was 7 or 8 years ago, because my daughter was very young. I was meant to go on a stag do to Barcelona. And I was on antibiotics for about a week. And I tried to go for a walk, and I just felt completely done in. I had to sit on a wall. And I would have been, you know, 33 or something. And I thought, my God, 2 weeks ago, I was playing football and cycling and everything. I can go like that. So I am, I think, more conscious than others that you've got to look after yourself because you don't know what's around the corner. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make me sad, but it is something I consider. And I don't think that's a bad thing, actually, because otherwise you're just hurtling towards old age, having not given it any thought at all.
It seems like to me you've got the balance right there, because it's part of your life as opposed to something that is so superimposed that it feels like a burden, or it feels like something that you're boring people with.
And it's not down to vanity.
Yeah. It's about living the best life you can.
Yeah. I mean, there's an element of vanity, but when I came in, I could easily have done this. I didn't show you my biceps, Callum.
Do you know, we're almost out of time, but if you just give me a quick flash.
You know, I...
well, that's why you wore your tight yellow T-shirt.
Yeah, I didn't
it?
Say, Gabby, watch this.
But you did come in a tight yellow T-shirt.
Yeah.
I'm wearing yellow today as well. I think this means we're both optimistic.
An oversized fits have come back in, but I'm really fighting against that. Because I want everyone to see my hot bob.
Sticking to the 1970s Lacoste.
Yes, thank you.
Rather than the up-to-date version. Ellis, I can't believe our time's up, because I think I've been looking at your watch thinking we've got ages, right?
No, my watch is slow.
Your watch is slow. And so I'm thinking, oh, we've still got time to talk about your obsession with Swansea City, who had a very mediocre season.
Yes.
Your obsession with Wales, who didn't qualify for the Euro.
Oh,
I mean, football,
don't.
I think it's good we haven't had to talk about football, because I think it would have brought this whole thing down.
That's really ruined my summer
anyway. So, that has ruined your summer, but probably improved your families, because there'd be more time to spend with them.
Absolutely.
And that, at the heart of, you know, everything is what it's all about.
That's what I said at full time. I said, I'm glad.
I said to all the men in bucket hats around me.
I'm glad, actually.
I've loved spending time with you. Anytime you want to come back on The Midpoint.
Oh, thank you.
It can be hard balancing taking care of kids, senior loved ones, and yourself. Remember, it's okay to ask for help. There's a reason 29 million families have turned to Care.com. Find background-checked sitters, nannies, and senior caregivers who can help with everything from watching kids after school to senior meal prep. Whether you need full-time, part-time, or even occasional help, you can view rates and book highly rated caregivers that fit your budget and schedule. Get the help you need with Care.com.
They say opposites attract. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is the best bed for couples. You like a bed that feels firm, but they want soft? Sleep Number does that. You want to sleep cooler while they like to feel warm? Sleep Number does that too. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, during Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. See store for details.
Having me.
Thank you so much. A huge thanks to Ellis. The hour flew by. He's such easy company. I loved chatting with him. And if you want to hear more from him, check out How Do You Cope, or Ellis James and John Robbins on 5 Live or BBC Sounds. And for the sports fans, he also presents The Socially Distant Sports Bar, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, as always, to Spiritland Creative and to you for joining me. I'll catch you again next Wednesday.